This week on the show, we're going to make a first installment in an ongoing investigative series about cryptocurrency fraud in Seminole County, Florida.
You may remember that back in March of 2021, the Justice Department opened an investigation into the conduct of Matt Gaetz, the representative of Florida's 1st District in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Gaetz was a prominent Trump supporter from a well-off family in the Orlando area. Before being embroiled in the controversy of the last few months, he was a frequent guest on Fox News and had even suggested that he might be on his way out of Congress for a job in media.
Enter Joel Greenberg, who was indicted in 2020 after being arrested at his home by federal agents. Greenberg admitted to prosecutors that he paid and trafficked minors for sex work, turning over materials that implicated Gaetz in the scheme.
Representative Matt Gaetz, who looks like a caricature artist drawing of me, is reportedly under investigation for an alleged sexual relationship with an underage girl.
A close associate of Matt Gaetz is accepting a deal with prosecutors and pleading guilty to multiple federal charges, including child sex trafficking. Joel Greenberg also agreed to cooperate with a reported investigation into the Florida Republican congressman as the Justice Department considers whether to bring charges against Gaetz, a Donald Trump ally.
It's also being reported that Gaetz may have paid for sex with women he met online. That story has since been confirmed by his whole vibe.
Court papers say Greenberg engaged in so-called sugar daddy relationships where he paid for sex. But they don't mention Gaetz by name. During a rally over the weekend in Ohio, Congressman Gaetz continued to fiercely maintain his innocence and dismiss the child trafficking allegations.
Gaetz then defended himself, releasing this very normal statement. See if any of it sounds suspicious to you. Matt Gaetz has never paid for sex. Matt Gaetz has never, ever been on any such websites whatsoever. Colin Jost does not believe you. Colin Jost thinks you've been to all the websites.
Greenberg faces over 12 years in prison for a range of criminality described this past month as prolific by federal prosecutors, who on October 18th requested a second delay in Greenberg's sentencing.
Roger Hanberg, an assistant U.S. attorney, said in the October hearing that Greenberg's cooperation in the case had, quote, taken us to some places we did not anticipate, end quote.
And Greenberg's criminality as Seminole County tax collector has ensnared numerous local officials and businessmen.
In the coming months, we expect the profile of this case to grow, with implications reaching from Orlando to Tallahassee to Washington, D.C. But the full extent of the criminal network still remains unknown.
What we do know is that Greenberg directed a scheme out of the tax collector's office that involved the purchasing of cryptocurrency with taxpayer money obtained variously from Florida's chief financial officer.
As detailed in Greenberg's plea agreement, the CFO distributed $300,000 at the request of the tax collector. All of that money went to buying cryptocurrency for Greenberg, as well as a mining build-out housed on Seminole County property.
Beginning in February of 2017, Greenberg used a series of tax collector credit cards to buy about $7,000 of cryptocurrency for himself. Later, using an agency bank account, Greenberg transferred further thousands of dollars to his own personal benefit.
By the end of 2017, prosecutors say that the money obtained through the scheme had been returned, but that it was, quote, a prelude to a large cryptocurrency purchase.
On December 20th, 2017, Greenberg emailed the Florida CFO inquiring about the maximum amount the state could use for a, quote, 60 to 90 day investment fund for the tax collector's office, end quote. Responding to Greenberg's request for, quote, the most you can do, end quote, the CFO loaned Greenberg $100,000. That day in 2017 was a peak in the cryptocurrency market. Then came the collapse.
If you think the Dow had a bad day, Bitcoin's was worse.
Coming back live, watching the collapse
of Bitcoin here from 12.8. We'll see if this is a spike low at 12.5 or if we continue lower.
So dramatic over the recent weeks. Several major banks in the UK and in the US are making moves to block customers from buying the cryptocurrency with their credit cards.
Technical analysis is fun sometimes, and other times it doesn't do so good for you. Not that it's a bad strategy, it is what it is. It's the marketplace. All we can do is trade what we can see.
As far as the latest fall is concerned, it's still the biggest in the short Bitcoin history. It is one of the big three. The worst was 71% in April 2013, 60% in 11, 57% so far from the all-time high so far this year. Joining me is David Waxman. He is a Bitcoin and digital currency.
In January, with the crypto market crashing, the CFO called back the short-term loan, which Greenberg was able to cover by obtaining $90,000 from a family member in the form of a check with just the word loan on the memo line.
In December of 2018, 1 year after the first loan from the Florida CFO, Greenberg requested another $200,000, an amount that was granted on December 20th. By December 27th, the money had been exhausted once more. The money was wired directly from the Florida Capital Bank account of the Seminole County tax collector to Silvergate Bank, where the unnamed crypto entity kept its accounts.
In January of 2019, Greenberg again turned to a family member to cover the loan, admitting that he had commingled his own funds with that of the tax collection agency.
The purchasing of crypto and the creation of a mining buildout on Seminole County property were carried out under the auspices of developing Seminole County's capacity to transact its business in cryptocurrency. However, an employee of the tax collector confirmed in the plea deal that, quote, the tax collector's office did not need its own supply of cryptocurrency as part of its operations, that the tax collector's office did not actually accept any cryptocurrency ever, and that the tax collector's office did not hold any cryptocurrency, end quote.
In July of 2019, Greenberg created Government Blockchain Systems LLC with an individual unnamed in the plea deal. Government blockchain systems used taxpayer money to buy crypto and cryptocurrency machines, which were sold for Greenberg's benefit.
And when the offices of the tax collector closed in early 2020 for COVID-19, Greenberg moved his crypto mining buildout to the tax collector's Lake Mary, Florida branch, where they were damaged in a fire that cost about $100,000 in damages and teardown.
At the time of Greenberg's arrest in June of 2020, a series of mining machines were still in operation in Greenberg's office.
At the extreme end of this story is Greenberg's apparent connection to Roger Stone, whose network of far-right activists colluded to stalk, intimidate, and slander an opponent in Greenberg's primary race for the 2020 election.
Jacob Ingalls, a right-wing blogger who appeared on Stone's InfoWars program, was among those working to discredit Greenberg's political opponents. Stone called Ingalls one of, quote, the very best young political consultants working in Florida today, end quote.
So today, we begin to pull on the threads of this story.
I'm not a politician, and I never planned to be in politics. I'm a teacher at a small school in a small community who simply saw a need to replace someone who was taking advantage of regular citizens like me. However, only 1 week after I filed to run for office in October 2019, I sustained an 8-month-long string of attacks on my character, on my right to run for office, and on my family's right to liberty. From 2016 to 2019, prior to my campaign, the state of Florida's oversight system was either complicit with or failed to monitor the Seminole County Tax Collector Office. Why? Who is responsible for this failure? Under a functional and effective system of checks and balances, it is quite possible some crimes might have been prevented and today's events may never have occurred. I ask our governor to initiate a thorough and exhaustive investigation into the actions of all state agencies assigned with oversight responsibilities of the Seminole County Tax Collector Office from 2016 to 2019. The Seminole County citizens deserve an assurance of justice and restitution. Corrupt politicians have taken advantage of our disengagement and neglect. We must replace this apathy with action.
Joining us is Brian Butte, one of Greenberg's challengers in the 2019 Republican primary. He's here to tell us about his firsthand experience, not just with Joel Greenberg, but with his cast of cronies too.
So I grew up in the Western Michigan area, and I grew up in a normal family. I became interested in you know, being a musician and pursued that in my undergrad. And I think I was raised in a home, you know, conservative home, and I'd say more conservative than Republican. But I began to see just the idea, the concept of injustice, and not the word fair. Like I always thought the word fair was an immature word. It doesn't reach deep enough. It's sort of, you know, children use the word fair, right? Then when, you know, I moved to Florida and remembered my fond memories as a kid traveling to Florida for spring breaks, I started to see this idea of, you know, people buying swamp land and buying cheap land and then turning it into these monstrously profitable entities. And so six or seven years ago, when I moved from Orange County, Winter Park area to the east side of Seminole County, where it's extremely rural. I shouldn't say extremely rural, like Iowa per se, but just very rural. I started to see characters in our county who were former politicians who were taking advantage of, and legally taking advantage of an opportunity to, you know, create these really enormously dense projects in our area. So again, that fits with my earlier comment about seeing just a lack of justice or a lack of continuity amongst people that I thought should be exemplary. And I learned that that naivety bubble was popping. and that just to give you a little idea of, you know, you asked about worldview. You know, I'm a dad, just to add a couple of elements to it. I'm a dad, a husband of 25 years, a music teacher of 25 years. I'm not I'm an emotional creature. I think like people, you know, everyone's an emotional person ultimately at some stage or level, but I am a creator and I don't like seeing people create things out of nothing and gain these unbelievable amounts of profits off the backs of citizens. It's not right. There are so few political representatives who will stand up to this. And I decided it was time to do that.
How did you first hear or encounter the River Cross development plan?
I joined a couple of community Facebook pages, and I started to notice some certain names. And when you notice them over and over and over, it grabs a hold of your synapse, your thinking. And then I noticed that there was going to be a meeting at a local church, and it was going to be hosted by Chris Dorworth and River Cross. I think, in fact, it was just River Cross. I don't even think I knew the name Chris Dorworth. I maybe casually saw it a couple of times. So I went. And if you can imagine being in a large church, probably 1,000 people could fit in there. And I would say probably half the church was full, 400 to 500 people. And in front, presenting this project known as River Cross, was Chris Dorworth and his attorneys. I lived in Orange County, so I didn't follow Seminole County politics. And frankly, Orange County is 3 times larger than Seminole County. And I'm just a music teacher, you know, a young father, a young husband, and I really wasn't paying attention to any of the local politics. I was paying attention, like most Americans, to the national political scene.
Sure. Dorworth had been the state representative for the Florida House of Reps from 2007 to 2012. And so by the time that you're crossing paths with him as part of, say, rural Seminole, or what would become, say, rural Seminole County, that he had transitioned into this other career, right, as a land developer through this revolving door between political power and this trend that you've been pointing out of people moving from political positions to positions of, you know, land development power in Seminole County. And so this is Chris Doerwerth here, and you're encountering him, you know, sort of without that context at first. And so what did you hear at that meeting?
There was just a general introduction of what this project would look like. And as I just remember the tenor of the meeting between the presenters and the community, mm-hmm. it wasn't well received. And I remember, you know, deciding, am I going to go? Am I going to, you know, when it's the community's turn to speak on this project, am I going to go up? Am I going to say something, or will I sit back, just observe and compare my own thinking to the overall breadth of the community's thoughts? And I was ultimately just going to sit and listen, but all of a sudden I noticed a couple of things. And I noticed that the presenter or the applicant, Chris Doerwerth, he made a couple of comments directly to citizens. One time he attempted to take the microphone away from someone. And there was a little bit of activism going on there. I did notice that. And he made it clear that it was his meeting. Now, mind you, he's required to present to the community, but he made it clear that it was his meeting and that we were all his guests. And so that sat in my mind for a moment. And then there was a moment where one of his attorneys, you know, made some kind of comment directly to a community member who was displeased and, you know, admittedly was speaking out of turn. And that reinforced my thought about my other concern, my prior concern. So I decided I'm going to stand in line. I'm going to say something. So when I did get up there, I looked at Mr. Doerwerth, had never met him before. And I said, you know, taking away the microphone, you know, from a citizen who might potentially be your customer, mm-hmm. probably doesn't meet the guidelines of PR 101.
Yeah.
And I did. I said that. I did say that. And then I looked at his attorney and I pretty much said the same thing to her. And then I left. And, you know, I'd say a week or so after that, we formulated, you know, officially with the state of Florida, Save Rural Seminole.
What was the representation of the River Cross project as it was being portrayed at that point?
Oh, it was a full-scale project. But I can roughly describe, you know, this project. You're talking about fitting roughly anywhere between 4,000 and 5,000 people, 1.5 million square feet of commercial, including apartments and homes, onto mm-hmm. 700 acres of farmland. That I remember one time I was asked about this, you know, could you characterize this land? I said, well, animals live on it right now. And, you know, citizens in 2004 voted for a referendum to allow, this is key, to allow the county commissioners to vote 3-2, either way, on any project within the rural area. And mm-hmm. this happened to be one of those projects that they would eventually have to vote on.
Did you have any interactions with anyone other than Chris Doerwerth at this point? We're thinking of other people involved, Keith Ingersoll or anybody associated with the River Cross development.
No. And I think to his credit, you know, Chris Doerwerth kept things pretty tight. Mm-hmm. And these were his ideas. The guy is a very bright individual. And he, at this time, I'm assuming was also a lobbyist or soon after became a lobbyist. So right. He's highly trained, highly educated. So no, I didn't. And the folks that I knew were some citizens on Facebook and some other local neighbors.
Mm-hmm. And of course, one of the things that had led to the end of Doerwerth's political career, right, was, you know, he was under investigation for the last couple of years that he was in office for, you know, ethics violations ranging from you know, failure to properly disclose assets, right, and other things related to sort of the business code of legislators. None of it ultimately amounted to anything until 2014, when a grand jury issued indictments against Dorworth and a couple of others relating to the state's open law meeting. So we have an attempt to develop a partisan middle county that had been set aside by voters in 2004. Talk to me then about Joel Greenberg. What did you know about his conduct as Seminole County tax collector before you declared yourself as a primary challenger?
Well, I knew of Joel loosely through some connections with the local Republican Party. I knew of Joel's name because he was in the newspaper and local television media. And prior to my filing, I did reach out to Joel one time regarding property taxes. He clarified something. I mean, I used Facebook Messenger. He was at the time a prolific Facebook user and poster. So I thought, oh, I'll reach out. And at the time, I thought it's possible that we might have some things in common, meaning, A, Republican. B, I started to become, politically active. He was friends with Chris Dorworth, or said he was friends with Chris Dorworth. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know that because I had never hung out with these people. So that was my first experience with Joel. And in fact, my last message to Joel, I still have this, was my letting him know on the 27th of September 2019 that I had pulled a packet to consider running for tax collector as a Republican. And his statement to me, without being specific, was, hey, no problem. Thanks for letting me know.
And then what happened?
On Friday the 4th, early in the morning, a friend sent to me an article that was posted in the Orlando Sentinel by Lauren Ritchie. It was entitled something like, tax collector gives $3.5 million to friends and former uncle, something like that. But, and that was it. I had studied Joel, obviously, throughout that week. And so after school, I drove to the supervisor of elections office, and I filed to challenge Joel Greenberg as a Republican.
Did you have a sense of what Joel Greenberg was wrapped up in, who he was associated with?
I had a sense that given names associated with him, and I studied some of these people, and given his behaviors recently, maybe a few weeks prior to that, there was another article about the blockchain company. You know, most people would say, Brian Butte's a musician. He's a music teacher. Well, that's fair. That is my profession, but that's not who I am. And I think that was ultimately someone's, Joel's and maybe some other folks' miscalculation, because I study things. And as part of studying Joel and seeing that article, I thought to myself, I'm going to offer the community a viable option. I'm a citizen. And I see that there's just something awry. And, I didn't realize what this would become at the time. And so I might even talk about a little bit of my political naivety. And, some people have political naivety just in general because they're living their lives and
they're normal people.
Yeah, they're normal people, right? But I wasn't naive, so naive that I didn't sense that maybe there's something being covered up here. So again, these are just senses. And later, about a week later, actually, after I filed, come to find out that, you know, my senses were not only correct, but apparently there was much more at play, much more at stake. The week after I filed, my school received one letter, then I think an additional 8 letters. And, wow. You know, and apparently they were identical. They were not identical on the outside, but they were identical contents. And, you know, I think, as I think about motive, and one day I'd like to know motive, I'm just curious, but I can only conjure motive was to get this guy out immediately.
Yeah.
So now in hindsight, you know, this crime was committed, of course, 2 years ago. Right. Amazingly enough, it feels like it was 2 months ago, but I'm able to look at this clearer, and I still have many of the same questions, but in my mind, I think I have formulated what I think those motives might have been. And I was asking questions, and I was asking the kind of questions that I think were probably uncomfortable.
Well, mm-hmm. That certainly can't be asked of someone engaged in a prolific criminal enterprise.
Right.
Right. And if you read count 14 in particular in the Greenberg plea docket, I have all the statistics ready. It's 31 pages of the 86-page plea. It's 36% of the content. It's a biggie. And it has to do with the cryptocurrency, the so-called Bitcoin machines, and the blockchain company. And I think this is ultimately the heart of where this investigation likely is right now as we speak, and likely the reason why we're looking at another continuance. I can only imagine, since this is sort of the tenor of your show, I can only imagine the exponentiality, I'll make that word up, of how far-reaching even one transaction might go, interestingly enough. So it just, there's a lot of irony here.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that among the irony being that what has really embroiled Matt Gaetz in this situation and what has certainly led to the ongoing, trial and investigation of Joel Greenberg is that they were engaged in the sex trafficking of minors, right? For profit and for their own personal participation. And of course, this was what they had alleged against you in order to try to take you out of the election.
Pretty ironic.
Could you talk about waiting for the world to catch up on what we know about Joel Greenberg?
Well, it's interesting. To some degree, it's still ongoing because right. It's ongoing. And I have been asking myself, when can I walk away from this emotionally, physically? And I don't know. I don't know an answer to that. I really don't. But I can say there are certain reference points of emotions that I remember. Certainly the first day when I was told about these letters, coming home, instant paranoia. And I think maybe I've shared this with, one other interview, but I'm driving home. It's about a half an hour drive home with my daughter, who at the time was attending the same school where I teach. And, a mixture of silence, a mixture of tears, a mixture of questions. I am my number one obligation to my daughter is to be a father. And, later on, it's interesting how even your daughter views you differently. We're a very open family. Our communication is extremely open. We've raised our children this way. And to not have known the exact contents of those letters, but to have to describe to your daughter, generally speaking, without being terribly detailed, because to some degree I couldn't, I didn't get to see the letter until I was no longer the suspect.
Right.
And so then even after I read the letter, it's not something I was sharing with people. I wasn't even sharing it with my children. But yeah, the paranoia kicked in. And I think that's the one element, one emotion that has dissipated the most. Mm-hmm. I'm still angry. I'm angry for different reasons now. I'm not angry because I don't know, like I was angry because right. I didn't know. I'm angry now at representatives who could have done something and to this day still have done nothing. Mm-hmm. It's as if I am radioactive. If parties mattered, then the Republican Party would have embraced me right away after they found out on June 23rd, 2020, and would have, even if it was disingenuous, taken advantage of that opportunity to get on the right side of history. I'm not sure why I would have to be party to or cooperative with any party, let alone the Republican Party, and I am still a registered Republican.
I think we have there's two threads that I want to sort of lay out here before mm-hmm. we let you get back to your afternoon. And that's, in addition to letters sent to your place of employment, where someone was posing as students, et cetera, right? In addition to that campaign, there was also a right-wing blogger called Jacob Ingalls, who was attempting to smear you on his media outlet and to your employers. Jacob Ingalls has a well-demonstrated connection to Roger Stone, someone that Roger Stone has acknowledged as a pupil of his, essentially, and somebody who Jacob Ingalls has acknowledged as a mentor. A lot has been made over the last few years of Roger Stone and his network, right, of people and associates and their connections to Donald Trump, right? Why do you think Jacob Ingalls invested himself in your character assassination?
I think there's something much larger at play. Jacob Ingalls is local. He wrote about Joel Greenberg a lot. I don't know anything about their relationship personally, but it seems as if it was a relationship based upon a financial understanding. I'm not sure why Jacob Ingalls would do these things for just kicks and giggles. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and it's established that he has a connection with L.A. Key, and L.A. Key had a contract with the tax collector office, and L.A. Key had an established relationship with Roger Stone. We know that Jacob Ingalls has an established relationship with Roger Stone. Roger Stone admits yep. that he has an established relationship with Jacob Ingalls and admitted so. He admitted so in court on the where Amy Berman Jackson was the judge. I think that's the D.C. district. And he admitted that that Ingalls and Enrique Tarrio both had access to his phone and his social media. We know that Facebook shut down 100+ inauthentic pages. One of those was April Goad, who was this character who came after me and sort of furthered the crime at the time. I didn't know who committed it. So why? Where did these ideas come from? Okay, well, when all of these things line up in the same Venn diagram, something is to be had there. And it'll be interesting to see as we move forward because Roger Stone likes to bash people. He likes to go after them. I'm ready. It'll be interesting to see who wants to come after me next.
So we have Matt Gaetz, who was and is a Trump supporter, right, from this same sort of particular area of Florida, right? We have Joel Greenberg having an associate of Roger Stone take on his political opponents and attempt to assassinate their character. Had been engaged for a couple of years by the time you're running against him in the primary in a cryptocurrency fraud scheme that had taken away, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars at least from Seminole County taxpayers. Why was the oversight from the state of Florida so lacking over Joel Greenberg's operation as Seminole County tax collector?
It would be disingenuous of me to not state the obvious, that this is based upon power. And so the Republicans have been attempting to garner the ultimate power in Florida, and they have it right now. And that's fine. A lot of the values fundamentally of the Republican Party are those that I share. What I don't like, I don't like crony capitalism. I don't like corruption. I don't like seeing representatives, and I use that word a lot, by the way, because that's what they're supposed to be, evolve into politicians, and they scratch each other's financial backs. This is going on. It doesn't shock anyone. It shouldn't shock anyone. If it shocks someone, then you certainly, it's time for you to start engaging and watching and do what I'm doing right now is, you know, that Republican bubble is popped. It didn't have to pop. The Republicans could have come and said, listen, you know, we're going to bring you into the fold. And I'm not saying that I would have wanted to be in the quote unquote fold or the power mechanism. But because they didn't do that, that tells me a lot, actually. It's the things that are unsaid that I listen right to, if that makes sense.
And at this point, the only investigation into these matters is occurring at the federal level, right? Despite the taxpayers that have been, you know, defrauded, despite, you know, the incredibly local level or nature of this criminality, the extent of the investigation is occurring at the federal level. What do you make of that?
The state of Florida failed. It failed the citizens of Seminole County. And if it's going to fail the citizens of Seminole County, it's likely failing the entire state of Florida. And what I mean by that, well, originally in the first, you know, question, and this question that you just asked, sort of variation of your first, I think it starts within the Republican Party. I mean, I have to move beyond that eventually in my answer here, but I have to preface that. When one body yields this kind of power and it's not questioned or we're not able to see a balance, and I don't mean even a two-party balance, by the way. I mean a citizen representative balance. But these representatives, they're no longer representatives. They're politicians. They have individual and collective goals. And in the meantime, the state of Florida oversight, I can imagine, you know, it's a bureaucracy, but this bureaucracy is made of regular citizens who work within it. You know, an example would be the Seminole County tax collector employees, 120 of them. Now, did some know that Joel Greenberg was committing these crimes? Yeah, I bet some did. Yeah. How about this? Let's work backwards. Did some suspect? Sure, I bet some suspected. Did some say, wow, after he's arrested, what was going on? Why was I not paying? Right. So, you know, not all of us are aware or can see the signs of malfeasance. And some even that did, maybe didn't want to admit it. Because it's safe when your party is in charge and control, and I don't want to be a whistleblower because my life and my job could be at peril. But look at my life at this point. You know, I had to do what an entire state of Florida should have been doing. there is no reason why you and I are speaking today. There should be no reason. There should be no reason that Joel Greenberg committed two crimes. One crime? Okay. And that's it. One crime. That's enough. And he's removed. But 33 counts?
Mm-hmm.
Narrowed down to admitted six? An 86-page plea? This is the result of a failure of the state of Florida oversight, which is managed under the authority of the governor of the state of Florida. And we've had during Joel's tenure, there were two governors. There were two state attorneys. The governors were obviously Scott DeSantis. The state attorneys were obviously Bondi and Moody. Then you have Jimmy Patronis. And I'll bet you're going to want to talk about that connection eventually with the Florida mm-hmm. Blockchain Task Force and Joel's pilot. But the Department of Revenue had oversight. The FDLE investigated him several times. Yeah. Phil Archer's office, and Phil Archer recently said to DeSantis and citizens, he's on tape, video, saying, we don't need the feds coming in to investigate. We have the ability to do so. Where was he? Where was Phil Archer? And he'll come up with a lame excuse like they all have come up with. But this ruined me and my family, has affected my job, my stature, my relationships with students and parents and supervisors and colleagues. I'm in it now. And I'm not going to back off. And I don't have a problem pointing fingers at my own party. I don't have a problem with it at all, because citizens want representatives.
Mm-hmm.
But I am in a unique position to stand up for the regular guy, the guy who's just trying to make it under a culture that doesn't really look at the little guy and say, you know what? Thank you for taking care of the nuts and bolts of the nation. So if I'm able to participate in that way, and not even that it would be my legacy, my public legacy, but it's my legacy with my kids. My kids know what I'm doing. Right. We talk about it often. It's terribly important, because it's going to affect how they view, their worldview, and how they view those who are supposed to be serving us.
This is an independently produced podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at COINTELPROPOD and support more of our work on our Patreon page. The link is in the show notes and in our Twitter bio. We'll see you next week on COINTELPRO. Thank you.